Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Maggie. Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Good day. I hope your week has been a good one.
It has.
Okay. This week we're going to talk about an old friend, congestive heart failure. Congestive heart failure is a far bigger problem, I think, than most doctors and patients recognize. It affects thousands of men and women. It is currently the most expensive disease entity in the U.S. Just by way of background, heart failure occurs when an abnormality of cardiac function causes a failure of the heart to pump blood at a rate sufficient for metabolic requirements under normal filling pressure. Clinically, we all know it to be characterized by breathlessness, effort intolerance, fluid retention, and unfortunately, a very poor survival. Fluid retention and congestion related to this can often be relieved by diuretic therapy. It's often difficult to define and diagnose diastolic heart failure. There have been some recently proposed criteria that include 1, the clinical evidence of heart failure, 2, normal or mildly abnormal left ventricular systolic function, and 3, evidence of abnormal left ventricular relaxation, filling, diastolic distensibility, or diastolic stiffness. In the U.S., studies of heart failure have found that 65 years or older have an incidence of about 1 per 1,000 in men, about half that in women. The etiology, coronary artery disease, clearly the most common cause. As I'd mentioned, the prognosis is very poor. 5-year mortality ranges from 26 to 75%, depending on the study, but tends to be more in the upper range there. 16% of people are readmitted with heart failure within 6 months of admission. And as I'd mentioned, in the U.S., heart failure is by far the leading cause of hospital admissions among people 65 years of age and older. Well, lots of patients who have specifically congestive heart failure also have diabetes. This week, Mark's going to help us understand a poem that asks the question, do oral hypoglycemics cause harm in patients with diabetes and heart failure? Mark, what did the authors find?
This was a study from the British Medical Journal, and they found, this was a group of Canadian researchers, and they searched several databases to try and find not only randomized trials, but cohort studies that looked at the association between the type of hypoglycemic agent and clinical patient-oriented outcomes in patients with diabetes and heart failure, both. And about 40% of diabetics will eventually develop heart failure. They did a good job of searching the literature, pulling out the data, and what they found was that the research results for insulin and metformin weren't homogeneous, and so they couldn't pool them. 3 studies of insulin found increased mortality with insulin therapy. The 4th and largest study of insulin didn't find an increase, but also didn't find a decrease in mortality with insulin in diabetics with heart failure. Use of aglitazone was associated with reduced all-cause mortality. The odds ratio was 0.83, but an increase in hospitalization for heart failure, and I think we're all a little more concerned about some of those adverse effects of the glitazones like Avandia. Metformin as monotherapy was associated with the greatest reduction in mortality, 30% relative risk reduction after 2.5 years of treatment, and they found the same outcome for the combination of metformin with sulfonylureas. Sulfonylureas weren't separated out and studied independently, but they were used as the comparison group for several studies of other hypoglycemics, and in those studies there was no increased mortality with the sulfonylureas. Most of these studies were of good quality. So bottom line is that metformin with or without a sulfonylurea appears to decrease mortality in patients with heart failure. Insulin, on the other hand, is associated with increased mortality, and the glitazones decrease mortality but increase hospitalizations for heart failure.
Interesting. So that I think that clearly it's one of these situations where we're going to have to weigh both what we're trying to achieve, the end goals, again, trying to stay away from surrogate markers, but to have these conversations with patients where we weigh the risks and benefits of both the treating of the diabetes with the long-term effect on heart failure.
Yeah, and I think we need some good studies that compare different strategies, different contemporary strategies in these patients who are hard to control. You know, once we have that patient on metformin and sulfonylurea, are we better off adding insulin? Are we better off adding a glitazone? Are we better, is a combination of all four going to be more effective? And really keep our focus, or shift our focus, I should say, in the case of endocrine researchers, from the sugar to the outcomes, the real clinical outcomes. Because, sure, we know that there are lots of ways to lower blood sugar, but they're all obviously not equally good at improving outcomes.
You know, I've always been struck at that we're talking about the sulfonylureas and we're talking about metformin, drugs that have been around for a very long time. And it's just surprising that given the prevalence of diabetes and the prevalence of heart failure, that some of this research hasn't been done, you know, far earlier, that we still have significant unanswered questions.
Yeah, I think it, particularly when I read the endocrine literature, I mean, there just seems to be a mindset that blood sugar is of primary importance, and not realizing that all ways to reduce blood sugar aren't equally good. And I think we're starting to finally see that shift in the last few years.
Right. And it's an important lesson, I think, that that we often get sidetracked looking at surrogate markers in blood pressure. You know, we get waylaid looking at the number and don't actually look at the meaningful outcomes. And we need to keep reminding ourselves to keep the money on what's important to our patients, which is their mortality and their morbidity. Anyways, Mark, thanks for your comments this week. That was very interesting. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week.
All right, see you next week, Mike.
Great, that's the poem this week. Thanks.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.